The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Hey, y'all. Welcome to episode number 7 of the Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we have more reviews from iTunes. The people are just being so kind to us. I don't know what to say.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and read some of them since they were nice enough to take the time to leave us some love. Cowboy Marching Band Nerd, that is probably the best name ever, left us 5 stars and said, I love the Girlfriend Bracket! I've played Magic for a few years, but I was never interested enough to listen to a show devoted to the game. I found a link to the Girlfriend Bracket on Reddit a couple weeks ago, and I've been listening religiously ever since. The hosts are funny and super knowledgeable. I always end up laughing and learning something new. Totally recommend. Thank you, Marching Band Nerd. That is very, very sweet of you. Either Jammer says, the roundtable format really shines and is an interesting contrast to the interview format of the Deck Tees. A great listen, and I'm looking forward to more. Big If Only One left us 5 stars as well. I truly love listening to these 4 ladies talk about magic, but I think it goes deeper than that. It's like talking to friends about how your week went. Everyone can relate to real people. Well, that is certainly what we try for. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that people feel like they're hanging out with their friends. And lastly, Dirtlewitz called us a breath of fresh air, gave us 5 stars, and said, we are awesome. Y'all really stand out from the crowd among MTG podcasters. Keep up the good work.
Cool.
Thank you all so much. We are also now available on Stitcher Radio, so if that is your thing and you prefer to get your podcast from there, you can now listen to the show and download the show from there, and you can also leave us reviews on Stitcher Radio as well, so please feel free to do that too. And let's go ahead and get started. Pro Tour Dragons of Tarkir was this past weekend. A lot happened.
Yeah,
it did. A lot of DQs happened.
So do we want to start off with that?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
All right. So DQs. So there were three?
Well, right. Or potentially three.
Okay.
I think they're investigating the last one still.
Okay. So as far as I know, the first DQ was Jeremy Dazani. Mm-hmm. Which is a shame because I love Jeremy Dasani. One of the things I love about him the most is he was at Pro Tour Born of the Gods, and he did a deck tech with Brian David Marshall, and he's very French, and he was describing his deck, and he kept saying boons instead of bounce. So he would say, "Je play the Snapcaster, and then you boons this card." And I must have rewound that part like over and over, like 100 times. And I would make my friends watch it too. And then, ironically enough, he got boons out of the Pro Tour. And so apparently, from what I understand, he was disqualified for lying to a judge. We're not really sure what the specifics are.
Yeah, yes. We don't know exactly what the game state was, but we know that he changed his story while he was recounting it to the judges.
Ew.
Which is bad. Don't do that. In case you didn't know, don't ever change your story.
I was having so much fun watching you on Twitter, Katie, address these things as they were happening. Like, you must have been just pulling out your hair. Like, what are these people doing?
I was trying to keep it friendly and increase everybody's knowledge. I don't know if I came across like that or not, but I tried. And then it got, like, overwhelming, and I was like, I should not try. I should just watch.
This isn't the first time that Jeremy's been accused of unsportsmanlike behavior. I believe at the last Pro Tour, he was accused of trying to get dealers to tell him what cards the other teams were buying. And then that turned into a little bit of a debacle. So people weren't surprised that he did this, and that's a shame because I think that he's fun to watch, and I always hate seeing people go down like that.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
The other DQ was Steven Speck.
Yes.
And he is well known for being a modern player, specifically an Amulet of Vigor player. And his DQ resulted from presenting a 53-card deck for shuffling after sideboarding. And then after a judge was called, the investigation determined that he had hidden 7 cards that were deemed a very good hand, in quotes, by the judge, and he was DQ'd immediately. What is that?
So he palmed them, right? Like, he had them... Okay, how big are his hands? Like, I don't understand how people do this. Like, my hands are itty-bitty. Like, I can barely hold my 7 cards.
Right?
But anyway, that's not good either. Don't do that.
This was an interesting case because this was the first time that he was actually caught cheating. But apparently he's had some really unusual luck playing Amulet of Vigor. Tom Martell had sent a tweet out saying that when he was at GP Vancouver, Steven Speck had 5 or more turn 1 Amulet of Vigor kills.
Yep. 2 of them were against a friend of mine.
Really?
Yes.
Man. And so people were not surprised that this happened because, you know, a deck like that, some people consider Amulet of Vigor to be a deck that can shit on itself, where it has those really great hands, but a lot of times it doesn't. And so to have that kind of luck to get turn 1 kills consistently is just unbelievable. Right. So people weren't surprised that this happened.
Mm-hmm. Was that all in the same tournament that they reported him getting turn 1 kills, like, every round?
I believe this was just GP Vancouver.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think he did well at Omaha, too.
And I saw some stuff that he, like, I think he won a modern 5K at a Star City or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was the other DQ. And then I believe there was the other one, and that was involving a gentleman named Felipe Valdivia. And this one involved N Hostilities, where N Hostilities wiped the board, and then he put his graveyard back in his hand. Is that what happened?
No, he took a temple that was in front of him and put it into his hand, but it's like he waited till his opponent was putting, like, his N Hostilities into the graveyard, and so he looked away, and then he sweeps everything to the side to put in the graveyard and picks up his temple and puts it back into his hand.
Ew.
So I watched the replay of it today after I saw the photos on Reddit, and I was like, oh yeah, it's clear as day. Like, I just couldn't even believe that he even did it. I was like, why even bother? Like, I don't even know why you would do it. I mean, it was so obvious.
Was he actually, like, officially DQ'd, or are they still investigating?
They're investigating.
Okay.
He wrote an apology of sorts on Facebook trying to explain what happened and trying to give a little bit more information about it. I never know what to think about these because I have to admit it's very wordy. And this to me seems like a very simple case of just saying, I'm sorry, period. And he's really going into these platitudes of, you know, being sloppy is not an excuse, and that what I did, even if unconsciously, is reproachable. Like, you could just take so many words out of this. You could have an editor look at this and just downsize it. I just don't understand. And I feel like this makes it almost worse.
Yeah, I mean, English is his second language, sure. I believe. So there is that to it. But it felt like he was kind of going a little over the top, being like, you know, these are all these reasons why I'm not a terrible person type of thing, and this is why I would, you know, never do this. This is a mistake. And then he brought up possibly ruining the reputation of other Chilean players into it. I don't know why that came in. I don't recall anyone saying anything badly about Chilean players, but maybe they did. But some person already commented on it and was like, yeah, no. He's like, you cheated. Sorry. Goodbye. So, I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like a lot. Like, it was very long when I was reading it. And, you know, someone's like, what are you reading? I was like, apparently this guy's apology. It's quite lengthy.
Yeah, I mean, there has been instances where, you know, somebody from some country does something wrong, and then everybody's like, well, everybody from that country is obviously cheating or whatever the case is. And so I don't think it was, like, inappropriate for him to address that. I mean, if he's seen things of that sort. But it seemed like he just wanted to fully explain his case and not just write, like, a 2-sentence thing saying, like, yes, I did this, I'm sorry, because it seemed like, you know, if he did have a brain fart and just pick it up or whatever without meaning to, then it seems like he should have a place to explain that. Whether or not people believe him is up to them, and whether or not he gets repercussions from the investigation is up to the DCI, but I didn't think that it was bad that it was wordy, I guess.
Something that stood out to me here is how he tried to make it seem like it didn't help him, so therefore he doesn't understand what the fuss is about. So he says, I do believe, however, that the action did not give me an advantage. With a dig through time in hand, the mana was worth more than a scry, even with Narset in play. I think for the most part, the whole sequence was irrelevant to the outcome of the game, but it has come to my attention that several people seem to think that it was a play I did to secure my advantage, which seems nonsensical to me. And that seems like it kind of reminds me of how Jared Betcher said, well, if, you know, if I was, you know, if I was really cheating, I would have won more games or something like that. And it was like, no. I don't know why that needed to be said, where it's like, you know, like, and I think like a lot of the conversation around these DQs, and especially around the Chapin incident, which we'll get to, is breaking a rule does not necessarily mean you cheated, but you did break a rule. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like this is a case where he's trying to say, well, yeah, I broke a rule, but it doesn't mean I cheated. And it's like, but you still broke a rule, and that's bad. And, you know, trying to say that it didn't really help you doesn't really need to be said.
Mm-hmm. LSV sent out a tweet that said, that had the link to the apology, and he said, one thing I find supports this being an accident is just how unlosable that game was. Basically saying, in his opinion, you know, why would he have felt the need to cheat if, you know, if he was intentionally picking up the land and intentionally putting it back down? Like, why do that, you know, when he's so far ahead? And so I think that he's defending him. And so that was his take on it.
That makes sense, especially if he is... It may have been driven by nerves, like he was doing so well, where the matchup was so good for him that he was, you know, his internal dialogue may have been, you know, don't fuck it up, don't screw it up. And then because he was so nervous, he did something he shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He did mention in his apology that this was his first on-camera feature match, and I imagine that's a lot of pressure for someone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But he did say, like, I'm not trying to use that as an excuse.
Right.
Like, that's understood that that's how you're supposed to, you know, you could do feature matches if you're going to the Pro Tour. But I think he did, I don't know, I liked his apology, you know, whether or not it was intentional and whether or not, however they rule it, in the investigation, I thought that his apology was, had good points.
Mm-hmm. By far the most talked about round was round 6 involving Patrick Chapin. And first off, if I understand correctly, he played 2 lands in 1 turn, which allowed him to stabilize the board, because apparently he wasn't doing so well at that point, and the 2 lands really helped. So that was something that people noticed and called him out for. And then in the same match, he had played a Johnny Mentor of Heroes and activated it, and did not reveal the card before putting it into his hand. He drew a Tassager off that. Mm-hmm. And that was another situation where people didn't think he was cheating, but again, the rules are rules, and he did break a rule, and there was a lot of discussion about this. What did you all think of that?
Well, I was actually discussing the issue with a friend of mine yesterday who's a judge, and a lot of the sort of controversy around this was, you know, around the fact that it was on camera. We could clearly see as the viewers that there was a Tassager in those 4 cards that he looked at, that he clearly put in his hand. And so we as the audience could see that he didn't cheat. He didn't put an illegal card into his hand. He put a creature or planeswalker card. But that's not what the problem is. The problem is that he didn't reveal that card to his opponent. And the card, a Johnny Mentor of Heroes, says that he has to reveal the card to his opponent. So the game rule violation isn't necessarily that, you know, the card itself was secret. It's that the opponent has a right to that information, and he denied that right to his opponent in that instance. Mm-hmm.
What did you think about people who argued that they were either coming on too strong because he's Patrick Chapin, or they did not come on strong enough? Do you think that his name and him being him affected this at all?
The ruling, or like the Twitter storm around it?
It could be anything, either the conversation or how it panned out.
I think even if it wasn't Chapin, if it had been somebody else in the feature match, there would have been the same amount of discussion around it, and I think that the ruling would have been the same because it's the correct ruling. It seemed like most of the discussion kind of turned into not whether or not the ruling was right, but whether or not we should change rulings depending on basically if you're in a feature match or not. Mm-hmm. That's most of the conversation I saw. And it seemed like, Toby Elliott was talking to a few people saying, like, this is a good conversation to have. But I guess in my personal opinion, see it changing anytime soon. And Cedric Phillips wrote an article on Star City basically around this whole round six. And I think he addressed a lot of really good points. I don't expect to see it changing anytime soon, but I guess that's just my personal opinion on feature matches. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
It would take them a while, like he was saying, to get everything secure so that every match is on camera, so that every match has the same, focus on it. So it's not just the feature matches that they're worrying about. They're worrying about all matches that are taking place. And I don't even know how you would even handle that type of situation with, so many players. Are you just going to have little mini cams and have a judge, responsible for each one? That seems like a lot of legwork and a lot of time, and I just don't know if that's something that could be feasible.
Like all judges wearing body cams?
That seems unnecessary.
Yeah, I was particularly interested in the conversation about the coverage because I remember Cedric just tweeting in caps and just saying, we don't need to be seeing this. Like, why are they not cutting away? Why is there not a break right now? Why are the commentators weighing in on the judge call? Why are they trying to excuse this? Like, apparently there were comments made about, oh, Chapin's from a time where rules lawyering happened a lot. And just, there was just no need for that sort of discourse. And I was hearing, I wasn't able to watch the Pro Tour because I was out of town, but, was it as awkward as it sounded?
It was pretty awkward, and I think the even more awkward thing was that their match had gone to time, and so there wasn't another match that they could cut away to.
Mm. Yeah, it seemed like... I do think that it's good. So a judge gave his initial ruling, like the judge that was standing next to the table, and then Chapin appealed it, which is his right, and then the head judge came over, and Chapin explained it again, and then the head judge... eventually gave his ruling, and I think up until there, everything was fine. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the moment, like, after the head judge was like, this is my final ruling, that's when they should have cut away, because then they kind of had, like, a semi-private conversation after that, which we just kind of kept watching. Oh. It just kept going and kept going. But I think up until then, I think it's good for players to see rulings like that being given and understand what's happening, like, especially for people that don't play competitive a lot, understanding, like, yes, you can explain your side of the story and what happened, and then your opponent gets a chance to explain, and then a ruling is made. Like, just seeing that process, I think, is really important. But everything after that, I think we could have done without.
Yeah, it just felt terribly, terribly awkward. I watched the coverage when I came back home today, and it was just... it was just gut-wrenching because you're just watching him, talk to the head judge, and the head judge is like, well, this is why, I'm doing this ruling. This is, why I'm saying these things. And so he's going back over the board state with him again. And I understand what Patrick Chapin was trying to say. But at the same time, when you go back and you watch it again and you see him take the Tastiger, he does start to pick up his hand. Yeah. And I think that he realized maybe at that point he made a mistake, but it felt like the way he was trying to explain it to the judge kind of felt like if you did get called out, like at a smaller tournament or FNM, you're trying to explain, well, this is what happened, but it's like, but that's maybe not exactly what happened. And maybe in the moment he was like, oh shit, like I started to pick these cards up. Is there some way to save this now? I mean, either way, I guess he just kind of messed up and I feel real bad for him. But after that, it just kind of went to like a whole other place. And yeah, they could have done that off camera, I think, and saved people a lot of the awkwardness. And, you know, Patrick Chapin being, you know, right on camera. I mean, he's gesticulating at the camera while he's talking to the head judge. And I'm like, oh my, this is in another place now.
Yeah. And whether or not he picked up the cards doesn't matter. Like, I mean, the rule is that way. Like, if you put a card into your hand without revealing it, even if both you and your opponent are convinced that that is the card that touched your hand and you're willing to reveal it or whatever, you could be, like, a magician in the more popular sense of the term, and doing, you know, some sleight of hand or something, and that's why the rule is the way it is. And so I don't think... I mean, I think the head judge was just providing customer service in that he kept listening to Chapin. Like, it seemed like if he had cut Chapin off at any point, the situation would have, like, ratcheted up in intensity very quickly. And so I think by him listening to his full story and just keeping listening was fine. I just think that we shouldn't have seen that part.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. So, Katie, I have a question, because when I watched back through it again, and I'm trying to hear what they're saying, the head judge seemed to have a big issue with the fact that the passiger that he drew touched the rest of his hand, that the second that happened, that became a bad deal. So yes. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah. So anytime a card, like even a corner technically touches another card in your hand, it's in your hand. Even if it's in your right hand and the rest of your cards are in your left hand, when it touches, that's the point of no return. And so that's why it didn't matter if he picked it up or not. It was sitting on the stack of other cards and touched technically his hand. And so we had this last weekend, I played one day of States and watched the other day, and there's multiple instances of people like scrying two off Serum Visions or something and almost bringing them like up to their hand, and there was a lot of almost game losses given, and it was kind of a bad deal, but making sure that those cards never touch is really important.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also, if I was understanding the discussion correctly, there was some talk of the fact that you still can't use, like, there's still no way to do, like, instant replays or to go back and watch video shortly after it happens. Did I understand that right? Because people were just saying, why didn't they watch the video? Why didn't they whatever? And people said that wasn't an option.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Why is that? Because you can do that in football. You can do it in soccer.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'm not sure on the technical reason from, like, whatever company is putting out these things, whether it's Star City or Channel Fireball or whatever. But if all of the coverage is not unified into one, like, system, then they might not have the same instant replay options. Like, if they're recording it, just like we're recording now, we can't easily right now go back and listen to it while we're still recording further on. And that would be my guess as to why they don't go back. But they also don't want to be holding up the tournament for people in the feature matches even more than they already are by going and getting them from their table and bringing them to the feature match area and then setting them up.
So it's not anything in, like, the rules, or it's not the DCI saying you can't do this. You think it's just technical stuff?
There is a section in the DCI that says, like, video replay coverage will not be used in, I forget the wording, something like current matches, but it can be used in investigations, like, after the fact.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's steer this back to some more positive happenings at the Pro Tour. Was there anybody that you all were rooting for going into this, or were there any decks that you were looking to take this thing down?
Blue Mages, were you interested in the blue-black control decks?
Very. I was sad I didn't really get to watch anything, but I was so happy that Adrian Sullivan made the top eight because he's fantastic and he knows blue-black like the back of his hand. And I was sad he didn't win it all, but I mean, heck, he still made the top 8. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I played Blue Black a few weeks ago, like before the Pro Tour, and it actually kind of turned me off to Standard. Like, I really didn't have fun playing it like I usually do, and I'm a control mage, so I was a little torn apart. I didn't know what to do with my life, but after seeing them play it, I think I have a renewed energy.
I was rooting for Reduke.
Surprise.
And, oh God, what's that guy's name? Oh yeah, Reduke. I didn't really worry about the rest. No, I was actually excited. There were several decks I was excited by. Willie Edel played some sort of Jund list. It was obnoxious. There was Den Protectors and Deathmist Raptors and Atarkas and Heroes Downfalls. And I have to say, I wasn't really that excited by it. It looked really busy. It looked kind of cluttered. I just wasn't really... I was excited about it when he said he was playing Jund. And then when I saw it, I was just like, ooh, girl. Like, just doing too much. I
saw a deck tech with him, and I thought he was doing, like, talking about Rally the Ancestors. Was that something different?
I don't
think... different deck?
That might have been his draft deck.
Maybe, yeah.
But I remember him saying he drafted Jund, too, so I'm not really sure, but...
maybe I'm just trolling again. I don't know.
What did we tell you about that?
I can't stop. Can't stop it.
You are going to end up in a prison in Vegas while we are all eating stuffed chicken wings.
You can't hold me down. I'm a free spirit.
The other list I was really excited by was, of course, Reed Duke. Him and some of his teammates were playing Chromanta Flayer.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, that was like a hug from Jesus. It was Chromanticore and Soul Flayer and Sidisi and, and Sylvan Curiatid, so you can give it Hexproof. And, ugh, I just couldn't help but love it. It didn't do so well. Zvi wrote an article about it on Channel Fireball. I'm not sure that I'd pick it up. Like, it does look a little spotty, but I was very excited to see it, and I think that it's a very beloved list. Like, I think it's something that people really want to become a thing, and it just hasn't quite gotten there yet.
Yeah.
I was really excited about the strength from the Fallen Den Protector, like mono green Constellation Devotion deck.
Yeah.
That deck was really awesome.
Yeah. Den Protector was like the breakout star.
Who was it that was piloting that day one that did really well? He went like 7-1, I think.
Oh, I don't remember. I saw him. He played against Owen Turtenwald. I don't remember his name, though.
Yeah, I love Constellation. I really wasn't into that deck, though. Like, you know, I like... One of the things I love about Constellation is I love the engine of it, and I love all of the gears grinding in a Constellation list, specifically, like, the Golgari list, where you have your Blossomin and your Doomwaken and your Whippin and your Drawn, and there's just, you know, watching the engine go off is really what I love about it, and it just wasn't Constellation-y enough for me.
Mm. Oh, Stephen Madden, that was his name.
Okay.
He was from Ireland.
Ooh.
Yeah, he had, like, the Northern Irish accent. It was really cool.
Oh, man. One of our... When we get to our listener question later, it's from somebody in Ireland, so I really wish he would have, like, sent us an audio bite or something.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. We should start requesting those.
Right. Only if you have an exotic accent, though. Like, if you're from...
Yeah, if you're American, then it's no-go.
Yeah, if you're from, like, Poughkeepsie, we don't need to hear that, but...
I really liked Andre Strosky. I just thought he was an adorable kid and very good. And
19.
Big fan.
He was 19.
I'm excited to see what he's going to do. I know. Second Pro Tour top 8 at 19. I was like, God, I feel old and not good at Magic. And what am I doing with my life?
When I was 19, I was serving ribs at Tumbleweed. And he's 19 and on his second Pro Tour. Yeah, I do feel like I haven't done enough with my life.
Yeah.
People were making comments because Adrian Sullivan is a very youthful 38. And there were all sorts of comments that were like, Andre wasn't even born when, like, you know, when Adrian started playing. Like, what is going on here? And just sort of the, you know, there were comments like that when Jacob Wilson did well, too, because we are seeing this, like, next generation of guys and girls coming through the ranks and just these, it's wild to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Top 8, boiled down to, we had red aggro, 3 blue-black control, a green devotion, a red-green dragons, an Abzan control, and another green devotion list. Who are you all pulling for in top 8? Were we all for Adrian Sullivan, or were you still going for Andre?
I was kind of on the Andre train.
Yeah.
I was still for Adrian, but I also like, believe it's, is it Shota?
Shota.
I like him as well. Yeah. And I was really impressed with the 3 blue-black decks, how different they were. They had some similarities, but, like, Adrian, he didn't run any dragons. Like, really? No? No dragons other than his Ugin Spirit Dragon. Other than that, nothing. So it was just interesting to see how different they were. Like, I broke it all down. I'm like, oh, okay, well, they played this, and he didn't play that. And it was just really cool to see 3 different types of blue-black decks, like, all make it to the top 8.
It was a very Adrian Sullivan list, though. Like, he's known for those one-ofs, and you're not really sure why they're there, but they work for him. Like, if you look at his sideboard, he loves Cranial Archive. He's been rocking that in his sideboard since he started playing Blue-Black Control, and then he has an Interpret the Signs, and, you know, just these cards where you're like, what? But somehow, you know, somehow he makes it work, somehow he knows why it's there, and God bless him.
Mm-hmm. Interpret the Signs is awesome with Dig Through Time.
Yep. And to go look up Cranial Archive and see what it did.
How does Interpret and Dig work together?
Because you, what is it? You draw cards equal to the mana cost, I believe it is.
Okay, so if you reveal, so you scry 3, yeah, and then reveal the top card of your library, so you can set it up so that you're revealing the Dig Through Time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you draw cards equal to converted mana, which is 8?
Yep.
Oh, man.
So it's really awesome.
And Cranial Archive. That's a good turn.
He was also rocking a Dragon Lord's Prerogative. Mm-hmm. Man. Yep. God bless Adrian Sullivan. I do love Adrian, of course, but I was rooting for Shota Yasuka. I've said that I have a great appreciation for the Asian Magic players. I was a big fan of Shota when he pioneered Esper Humans back when, but there was something else I really enjoyed about Shota Yasuka. So they were, if you read the top 8 profiles, and they always ask the teams questions like, you know, what did you play? And, you know, what did you draft? And things of that nature. And I had to laugh at a couple of Shota's answers because he was so curt. And if I didn't know any better, I'd swear he was being shady. So, for example, the question they asked him is, what standard deck, other than any you're playing, impressed you most this weekend? And Shota goes, no other decks. And normally the guys are really gracious. They're like, you know, for example, Marco was one of the top 8 guys from Italy, and he says, blue-black control, it looks insane. And Thomas Hendricks was like, you know, what impressed you? And he was like, you know, having good players with a win percentage. And, you know, Andrew was like, you know, what impressed you? Red-green devotion. And showed us just like, none of y'all.
That's why I'm playing.
It was kind of like, it was kind of like a disregard other decks, acquire 40 grand.
I loved that. And he's just very, I love his whole look. He's just very simple, no nonsense, and I dig that.
Mm-hmm. He made, like, an awesome play that I think people really underrated. He was on the off-camera feature match that they just cut to while they're not watching the main one. Mm-hmm. And he was playing against the mirror, and I don't know what round it was, but the other guy had a Perilous Vault on the board, and Shota got to resolve Ugin, and he -7 to kill him, even though the guy only had, like, a converted 3 or something mana cost of something that was actually colored, to put his Ugin in the graveyard instead of letting it get exiled, so that he could get it back with his one of Haven of the Spirit Dragon later in the game, even though he didn't have it on the board. And I was like, ugh.
Wow.
That's a
control player after my own heart. And, like, the commentators weren't saying anything about it, and I was like, you missed this amazing play! Didn't you see that? And I was getting all riled up. Like I am right now. But, yeah, it was awesome. He's a great player.
Yeah.
How did you feel about it boiling down to red aggro versus blue-black control? Were you still optimistic that control could take this thing, or did you think it was just going to end badly?
That's a hard matchup, for sure. So I was quite sad when I tuned in at the last minute. I'm like, oh man, maybe he could still pull this out. Oh crap, that's a lightning strike, and he's got a Tarka's command. Well, it's been fun. So that was a little too bad, because he only had, what, two lands in his hand. He played, I think, Polluted Delta, and then he had an island, so he really had nothing else at that point. But the games went super quick.
Yeah.
I watched it today.
That was one of the shortest top eight feature matches I think I've ever seen. One of the shortest top eight finals that I think I've ever seen.
I was, like I said, we were at the hotel when this was all going down. And at the time, I remember thinking, I wouldn't have minded if Red won, because I have a hard time dealing with Abzan aggro. So my theory was that Red aggro would do really well. I'm thinking I can deal with Red aggro a little better, so people are going to put down their Abzan aggro decks and start playing Red aggro, and then I can use Doomwake Giants and Drown in Sorrows, and everything will be glorious. But now that I'm looking at these Red decks, they're so much more resilient than I thought. Like, you know, you're seeing these dash cards that you, like you said, Hallie, you can't use Sorcery Speed removal on. And you're seeing these cards with haste, and you're seeing a Tarka's Command, which you could Drown in Sorrow and then say it makes everything bigger. And I just don't see this Red aggro deck being so easy to deal with as the Red decks we're used to, where it's just a bunch of 1/1s and they're both just turning, they're all turning themselves sideways and just rolling their faces against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Red players are getting smart and only playing two Rabble Masters main deck and two sideboard, because all the other Red decks are playing Wild Slashes.
Yeah.
That yeah. One of Becomement is some spicy.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Some spicy.
So where do you see these decks going after the Pro Tour? Like, how do you think the format's going to adjust or adapt?
I think we'll see a higher prevalence of Vile Blight and Drown in Sorrow, and things will have to go back to being a little fatter. Mm-hmm. I think this Red deck is like, can sweep a couple tournaments, but then once people start being like prepared for it and boarding for it, I think that it'll fall by the wayside.
Chris, you said something interesting when we were at States. You had indicated that there might have been a disconnect, because I remember telling you what was going on at the Pro Tour, and I was telling you, oh my god, Chris, all these people are playing blue-black control, and they're doing so well with it, and you were like, girl, because I'm sure not, and you weren't quite yeah. You weren't quite able to, you know, these people were doing very well with it, and you indicated that you weren't having the best time with it, and that maybe, you know, it wasn't that great, or maybe it just wasn't great in your hands. Was that right?
Yeah, it just didn't feel... I don't know, it just didn't feel right. Like, something about it felt wrong, and maybe it was because I was playing a build that had more of the dragons in it, and maybe I'm just not feeling that myself. I would have to go back and watch some of the other blue-black matches to see, like, how many cards did they end up in their hand, you know, after a while. Did they still have a lot left? Because I felt like I was having maybe two cards in my hand at max, trying to deal with all these little situations, or it was just a lot to deal with. And by the time I'd be like, who's my Dragon Lord Ojitai? And they're like, oh, that's cool. And they were just like, you know, Valtongue Invocation or something. And I was like, well, say goodbye to that. I really didn't have anything. I didn't have a counterspell at that point. Maybe I had maybe used like a couple already, or I was just drawing, and be like, where is the rest of my deck? Like, I don't even know. So I'm not sure. Maybe I just need to go back to playing Adrian's build or try something different or something. But no, it did not work out for me. But happy times for them. It worked out well for them. Obviously, they made top eight. But I would have to go back and watch the matches and kind of see how they played it and what they played against. And like I said, how many cards they ended up having in hand at any given time.
It definitely can be like kind of clunky. Like, that's how I felt while I was playing. It was like, I need to have my untapped land at the right time, because as soon as you fall behind, it's really hard to catch up. And I think we kind of saw that on camera, but they happen to always just pull it out, which is awesome for them, but sometimes I can't pull it out, and it's not awesome for me.
Part of the cards, Yugi.
Yeah. I don't have them.
In there.
Did you see Andrew Cuneo? He played blue-white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do we think that might have been? Do you think that might be more up your alley?
It might. I was looking at the deck list. I think it was yesterday, maybe, And I have played something similar. It uses some cards that, let's see, let me just go back and look at it on my phone right
Yeah, because he made a deck tech on and put it up on Channel Fireball.
now. Yeah, and I saw that, and I like End Hostilities. It's just sometimes it's just too slow. You just really have, not a lot of time to deal with certain threats. And I mean, it's a cool card, but it's no Supreme Verdict. Like that is for sure. And Elsbeth's in there, and I love Elsbeth. I just wonder, or with these other cards in there, is she gonna be okay, so to speak? But I'd maybe give it a try.
I haven't seen that deck list. How does it beat like any aggro deck? Like,
Yeah,
what
because
cards is it playing to handle like small things?
it seems like the most compelling reason to play black over white in control is that it gives you so much more early interaction.
Well, this deck was running Last Breath. We had Last Breath, Valorous Stance, which is a good card. Devouring Light. He was on Perilous Vault. Secure the Wastes, which might be a finisher, I'm guessing.
Interesting.
Elsbeth, he was on Raise the Alarm. Surge of Righteousness was in his sideboard as well, so that's good against the aggressive decks. And Glare of Heresy, which is good against Abzan Aggro. Radiant Purge is in his sideboard. So he does seem to have some different answers.
He does. And that's why, like, maybe I would throw it together and be like, okay, well, I've played other versions of this, maybe see how it goes. I mean, Secure the Waste definitely seems kind of cool. All I can think about is the ex talking about loving Launch the Fleet. Just dying about
Shut
that.
it down, Chris. Shut it down.
I know. It's just like, really? Okay. I like how he has a Nullify in there. I mean, that's definitely a card that sometimes when you do put it, in a control deck right now, people don't expect it, really, and they're just like, oh, target creature or aura, and kind of ruins people's days a little bit. Maybe I would put another one in there just for fun, because I don't like Last Breath. Maybe it's just me. I know it deals with a lot of things, but something has just always personally felt wrong about it to me. So I just don't like really playing it. Maybe I'm just wrong, but personal, not fave.
Aren't you also the girl that didn't like Mana Leak?
Yes.
Yeah,
We're
know.
in a
Maybe,
secret
maybe.
fight about it. She doesn't know about it
Like,
yet, but we're in a fight.
I don't know. It's just not my thing. Now, I will say, just as a random aside, that not that I don't like Remand, but it definitely kind of screwed me up a couple times this weekend, that is for sure. So maybe I could give Mana Leak some love again. I'm not sure. I have to work on my deck.
Take it in.
Accept
it. Flow.
So as Chris and I said, we were at SCG States this past weekend, which is why we were not able to watch the Pro Tour. We were there for Standard on Saturday, and then we got a hotel room and played Modern on Sunday. Chris, were there any memorable moments from this past weekend? Did you have a good time?
I did. I did. I think I had more fun playing Modern than I did Standard. And I think
Yay.
but part of it was because I was just so increasingly frustrated while I was playing that blue-black deck. It got to the point that it was like round four, and I was like, why am I doing this anymore? Like, I'm not even having fun playing the deck. Like, if I was still having fun playing the deck, I'd be like, sure, let's go. I don't care. I can stay here till forever. But it just wasn't fun to pilot after a while because I kept on running into the same problems, and it was just kind of frustrating to me. But I did run into some people that I knew from Green Bay, which was really cool. And so it was nice saying hi to some people, going to a store I'd only been inside of, I think, once, never played there. And I don't know. I don't think anything really too crazy happened while we were there, but I had a good time. Definitely more fun with Modern, though, for sure.
I played a Sultai Reanimator on Saturday. I had a lot of fun playing it. I was playing Reed's List, of course. And I was mana screwed a lot of the time. Like, I really don't feel like I was playing to my full capacity. And it was even to the point where my opponents were commenting on it. I remember my first opponent was playing, he was playing Angry Black Men, which is what they call mono black aggro. And he was playing more of a Warrior's List or a Soldier's List with that Bloodshin Rager. So I missed six land drops. So like I kept a two land hand and I had a lot of three drops and I was like, all right, girl's gotta draw one land. I can draw one land in 3 turns. This is cool. And then 6 turns went by with no land. And And he was just like, did you really go? And he's keeping track of it with me. And he's like, is that really five turns? He's like, oh, I'm sorry to do this. And then he just turns his warrior sideways. And then he had this combo with blood-soaked champion and then that warrior where you can sacrifice another warrior to make the opponent lose life.
Oh, bludgeon fanatic?
Yeah, so he would, like, attack, sacrifice the warrior, and then because raid triggers, he'd cast it again, and then he'd do it again.
Gross.
I know. So that was nasty. And then I got to play against red-green. And red-green is what the Tumblr kids call problematic. Mm-hmm. And here's why. For as long as we've always known red-green decks, it's always been about get the fatty on the board, maybe have a Domri, maybe a Xenagos, and do your thing. And the green-red dragon decks that are out now can attack you from so many different angles. You know, you have the Thunderbreak Regent. And specifically, one thing I noticed about the Thunderbreak Regent is it affects itself.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, normally the tribal cards will say every other, like Lord of Atlantis and things like that. Oh, no, it counts. Mm-hmm. And my opponent had three of them on the board at one point.
So
if I want to... Huh?
So was your opponent playing, like, a lower curve red-green deck with, like, Serac, or a larger curve one with, like, a Tarka and stuff?
It was larger curve.
Okay.
Yeah. So he had three regents out at one point. So if I wanted to target any dragon, that's 9 damage off the top. So the typical plan against GR, which is just kill the fatties, doesn't really work because the fatties can do damage to you just by targeting them. Mm-hmm. And then even if you do manage to kill the fatties, they have that Haven card.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, like, I had killed the Stormbreath Dragon because I was gaining so much life from the whip. I'm like, fuck it, I'll take 9 damage. Got die, you know. So I would target stuff, and I'd gain life back from the swing, and then I killed a Stormbreath Dragon. Once I'd killed the Regents, I killed the Stormbreath. And then he pulls out the Haven, has enough mana because this deck can go long, and then he just pulls the Stormbreath out with haste, and I'm like, what? And the deck just has so many angles, and it has a lot of resiliency against removal. Mm-hmm. And the deck is scary. I had a new appreciation for that deck after the weekend because I went into it thinking I'll just use a lot of removal spells, and that was not the case.
Yeah, I read an article that Chris Van Meter wrote about that deck because he won an SCG Open with it recently. And he was talking about how all the different threats in his deck, whether it was Thunderbreak Regent or a Tarka or Stormbreath Dragon or even Ashcloud Phoenix, which he had as just maybe a one or two of, all of those cards were so resilient and dodged so much of the prevalent removal that he said that he felt like he had a great matchup against removal heavy decks.
Yeah, I was definitely not prepared for that, and I didn't expect it to put up the fight that it did. Mm-hmm. I will say, I do think, though, if Thunderbreak Region is going to keep being a thing, I do think Crackling Doom is going to become a lot better, mm-hmm. because you're not actually targeting it.
Yep.
I also think the Foul Tongue Invocation is going to be a good thing. These sacrifice abilities, I think, are going to go up in value mm-hmm. if this deck keeps going.
It was like 50% of our field on Saturday at our states.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, that's the deck to be playing, but then you have to play the mirror match all day, and I don't know if that seems fun.
Yeah, I've been playing a version of that deck. I don't have a Tarkas, so I tried playing like a lower curve version with Serac, which is also a pretty good card, because I didn't realize until I started playing it that Serac can give himself haste.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. It's been pretty good. I've had a pretty good run with it, but I haven't faced the mirror yet, so I don't really know how that goes yet.
Yeah. I will say, one of the things I really enjoyed about Sultai Reanimator was the with the new Sidisi, the toolbox mm-hmm. feature. I never played Birthing Pod. I've never played decks that have those silver bullets, and it was really nice being able to search for exactly what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of times where I punted because I didn't know what I needed, where I was like, oh, I can search for something. What do I need? And I would pull out a Silumgar, not knowing that I really needed a whip, or, you know, I would pull out a Bile Blight when I really needed a Drown in Sorrow, and, you know, there were a couple times where that really tripped me up, because I've never been able to do that with a deck before, mm-hmm. and it added a really cool angle to the deck, and I really had a lot of fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I did have a judge call, though, that ended up getting kind of tense. In fact, one of the people sitting next to me actually called me a bitch because of the judge call.
Oh, dear.
Good times. So my opponent, can I tell you the story?
Yes.
Okay. So my opponent was playing mono white warriors or soldiers, I believe. And he had that one Kithkin where when it attacks, you can put a soldier from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on that. And he didn't say very much throughout the entire game. He was not a chatty fellow. So we go to combat. He has only a Brimaz. And I have Sidisi and a Reed Duke zombie token, because that's what I use for zombies. So he swings with Brimaz. He doesn't say anything. A couple seconds go by. I put the zombie in front of Brimaz. A couple more seconds go by. I put the zombie to the side of me to indicate that the zombie is dead. And I ask him if he's done. And he goes, "So you're taking one?"
Oh, from the cat token.
And I was like, "I didn't see a cat token, so no, I'm not taking one." And he was like, and he insisted that I take the one. So I call the judge over, and he tells his side of the story, and his side of the story is totally false. He looks at the judge, and he goes, "I said trigger, and reach to my right," and I was like, "You did not. You said nothing to me. You didn't verbalize anything. I didn't see your hand go anywhere. Like, your hand was in front of you. After you declared combat," I was like, "You are lying." It did not happen like that. And he then stuck to his side of the story. I again said he was lying. The judge decided that they were just going to rewind combat. Mm-hmm. So, of course, because the judge is watching, he puts out the cat token, and I then put Sidisi in front of the cat. As luck would have it, I still ended up winning the game. But it was just the idea that he would bald-faced lie in front of the judge. And I was just like, how could you do that? Like,
yeah.
But because I stood my ground and because I got upset, that apparently made me a bad person, and I didn't really think I deserved that. Mm-hmm. So that kind of soured my mood on Saturday a little bit. But...
So the person next to you just looked over and was like, "You're a bitch."
No, he was playing his game, but he was looking down at his hand, and he was like, "Oh, the bitch is coming out," and he did that.
What?
I would have been like, "Judge." Right, when I would have been like, too. "Judge, like, what's this guy's deal? He needs to go over there, or he's gonna be in a bad place with me."
I was already seeing red from the judge's call, so I didn't really think to react to that. I was just pretty much, anyway, that was towards the end of the day anyway, so I just sort of let it happen. Sunday was a very interesting day. I was playing Jund. I played a lot of really odd matchups. I played Rakdos Control game one. I played Amulet of Vigor, which I lost to on turn three. Yay! and then I played Living End twice and Loam Pox once. It was kind of like that Matthew McConaughey movie, The Ghost of Ex-Girlfriend's Past. Where it was like, "Oh, you played Living End. Here you go, girl." And Living End is impossible for black-green decks. Like, don't even bother. Even Willie Edel is just like, no, don't even try. So I lost Living End once. I did manage to beat the Loam Pox guy through some miracle of God. And then my last opponent, I had a feeling he was on Living End. And then I did a turn one Thoughtseize, and I was like, "I'm just going to go get lunch." So I was like, "I'm not even going to bother," because I've played Living End. I know that it's fantastic against black-green decks. So I just signed the slip, and then I dropped, and I got Chinese food. But I will say one positive thing from Sunday is Kolaghan's Command was really, really good.
Yeah.
It was good. I had it used against me. I used it against people. It's a very good inclusion in a modern Jund deck. So if you're thinking about that, definitely go for it. Probably no more than a one of, but it's a really good card. Mm.
I played Modern States on Sunday. I didn't play Saturday, but I did play Sunday. And I put up the worst tournament results I've put up in a really long time. I went 2-4, and...
2-4? I dropped it 1-5.
Katie, please, no. Sorry. I didn't win a single match.
Sorry. I'm sorry. And I mean, you know, people complain about luck and, like... You know, the heart of the cards was not there, and this was just so true. Like, games 1 through 8, so into my third round, I didn't play more than 3 land, and all of them were in my opening hand, and they were never the right colors. Like, I played Amulet of Vigor round 1, and I had 4 Path to Exile in my hand at the end of the game, and 0 white sources, which I play like 12. And he was just hitting me with, like, Primeval Titan. And I was like, this would not have been a game if I could have just hit this one card sometime. And so, yeah, I went 2-4. And I was, like, I was pretty tilted after round 3. And then this, like, wave of positivity came through my life. I was talking to one of my friends, Cody Trafton, And we just had a chat, and I was like, I'm not having fun. And he's like, well, if you're not having fun, you shouldn't play. Like, that's not how Magic is. And after our talk, I was like, you know what? I am going to have fun. This is going to be the most fun tournament of my life. And so I went into round four, like 0-3, and I sat down across from my opponent, and I was like, I'm going to have fun if I beat you or if I lose to you. Can you please have fun with me? And he, like, looked at me like I was insane. And I was like, please, just let's have fun. And he was like, okay. And then from there on out, like, day was fantastic.
Aww.
I got to play fun matches, and all my opponents were nice, and none of us did well, because obviously we're sitting at the low tables, but, yeah, turned it around from a tilt, so figured that that was probably a win in my book, even though I didn't actually win.
That's awesome.
Sometimes being at the low tables is fun, because then, like, everyone's just like, lol, who cares? You're just having a gay old time, just talking to everybody, and, you know, just shooting the shit, playing your game, I suppose, and I don't know. I don't necessarily feel bad about being there, but sometimes I feel bad about the reasons that I got there, I guess. I don't know.
I played against Fopod, and I let him know. I was like, you know, I'm on this podcast, and one of my co-hosts, she really hates her deck. And he just kind of looked at me, and I was like, it's okay. I don't mind. And then he kind of... I just probably sounded like an insane person the whole day. Like, nobody knew what was going through my head, but I tried really hard to communicate.
You must have sounded like some random bag lady. Like, you're going up to one guy and saying, please have fun with me. And then you're going up to another guy going, I'm on this podcast with this girl, and she hates your dad.
It's like,
yeah.
That's
like, the podcast is in your head.
Yeah, it was very all over the place. But we had a great time. I did end up beating him, but that deck is pretty, like, resilient in its own way. We definitely had a good match.
Good.
What did you pilot this weekend, Katie, your four color?
Yeah, I played four color. Still think it's good, even if I can't draw lands.
So, Hallie, you recently indicated that you are going to a modern PPTQ, and you need help picking out a deck.
Yep. I haven't played Modern in a really long time, and I know that you guys do. You played Modern just this weekend, so I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions for me.
I do. I have a deck I think you're going to love.
What is it?
Okay. Not just love. Lurve. Lurve. Okay. You like Delver, yeah?
I love Delver.
Okay, girl. I got you. Okay. MTG Goldfish, which I love because I've been trying to get back into MTGO a little bit. Grixis Delver has been popping up a lot in the modern dailies. And let me break it down for you, because it's not what you're probably thinking.
Okay.
It has black, but it doesn't have any discard spells in the main.
Okay.
Like, normally when you see this, people load up on the Thoughtseize and the Inquisitions and all that stuff. Oh, no. There's, like, two Thoughtseize in the sideboard, but the only black spells in the main are Gurmag Angler.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets better. Gurmag Angler, Tassiger, or as I call him, Tassigirl, Terminates, and Murderous Cut. So you're using Delve spells. Like, you're utilizing the engine that the Delver pre-ban used, but you're spending those Delve spells on, like, Murderous Cut and Tassiger and the Fish. Mm-hmm. And other than that, it's Delver, Young Pyromancer, Serum Visions, Electrolyze, Mana Leaks, and yeah, it's Grixis Delver.
That sounds pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually not that expensive to build either. And then there's some Dragon Claws on the sideboard. There's the Blood Moon. It's sort of like the, like I said, the Delver package that we know, which is a little bit of black in it.
Okay, cool. I will definitely think about that.
Yeah, I saw this and I saw that it was coming up through the ranks, and I was like, I could see Hallie possibly playing
this.
Yeah. Do you know what your meta's like at all?
I have no idea. I haven't played Modern, like, at a local tournament in a really long time. Like, there are a couple of stores that have Modern tournaments, like, pretty small ones, and I don't really go to them, so I don't know what people play locally. A lot of the people who play Modern seriously play online here, so I don't really have as many opportunities to interact with them in person.
I think a safe deck going into an unknown field is just Splinter Twin.
That was at the top of my list, actually.
Like, you get to free win sometimes, and then if you're playing against somebody of a lower skill than you, like, that deck definitely rewards you for that. Mm. And if you're playing against a wide variety of decks, like, it's just pretty solid against a lot of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered, where was I going with this? Are you opposed to merfolk? Because I've heard that merfolk can be described as tempo.
Yeah, I have thought about playing merfolk, and I have a whole bunch of merfolk cards because I briefly considered playing it in Legacy. So I have a bunch of, like, Silvergill Adepts and Lords of Atlantis, and well, I guess Lords of Atlantis isn't legal, but, like, Was it time-shifted?
I think it was M10, possibly. I know it is. Let me click on the list here.
Okay.
Lord of Atlantis.
Time Spiral. Yeah.
Yeah, Time Spiral.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. If you're looking for merfolk advice, Gabby Sparks loves merfolk. And we love Gabby. And the last couple times I've seen her at Modern GP, she's rocked it. And she's very proficient at it. So if you do decide to go the merfolk route, Merfolk route, I would hit up Gabby and see if she has any advice for
okay,
you.
Okay, sweet.
Our top eight of our states was 2 merfolk, 2 affinity, a junk, like normal junk, and then wilt leaf junk, and then black, red, like goblins, aggro, blood moon, discard stuff. Yeah. And then what was the eighth one? Can't remember the eighth, but I was like 2 merfolk and 2 affinity in the top eight. That's astounding to me.
Yeah. But, I think weren't there 2 affinity decks in the top eight of the IQ at SEG Syracuse?
Yes,
I think there were like 2 affinity decks and like 2 Jund decks and green white hate bears and a couple other random things.
Yeah, the top eight, Affinity came in first, yeah. Green White Hate Bears was second, Jund was third, Abzan was fourth, you Blue Red Twin was fifth, Affinity sixth, Jund seventh, and eighth Abzan.
Mm-hmm.
We have a listener question here, and it is from a gentleman named Liam in Ireland. I'm really loving this world domination that we're doing.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it is. So, from Liam O'Donnell Carey, O'Donnell? Ireland? It's not O'Donnell. Isn't it like O'Donnell?
He needs to send an audio clip. I don't know. Can't confirm unless he confirms.
Yeah, Liam, tell us how to say your name. And we just want to hear you talk Irish anyways. But so Liam says, hey, ! Love the show. You are awesome. Keep it up. So I was playing some standard online the other day, and I faced off against this guy's Impact Tremors deck. I was initially skeptical, but when 2 copies are in play and every Hordling Outburst deals 6 damage, shit gets real pretty fast. Those are his exact words. I'm not paraphrasing. The dude admitted he was high as a kite when he made the deck, but I thought it was friggin' awesome. I was wondering how inclined you are to sleeve up a wacky 75 to try and live the dream, as opposed to trying to win with a deck you are more comfortable with and is in all likelihood more competitive. Cheers, Liam in Ireland.
I mean, for me, the short answer is no, and that's more of my boyfriend's thing. Right now.
So you never just want to have fun?
I don't know. I should mention, the deck that Robert is playing in Standard right now has Battlefield Thaumaturge and Descent of the Dragons in it.
I don't know what either of those cards do.
So Descent of the Dragons is 4 red-red. Any number of target creatures are destroyed and replaced with 4/4 dragons, or 4/4 dragon tokens or something like that. And Battlefield Thaumaturge says that any time that you target a creature with a spell, for each creature that is targeted, that spell costs 1 less. So you basically pay double red and turn 4 or more of your creatures into dragons. And then you get to play Dragon Tempest, which is an enchantment that says whenever a dragon enters the battlefield under your control, it gains haste and it deals damage to your opponent equal to the number of dragons you control. So they all see each other entering the battlefield at the same time and just dome your opponent for a bunch.
This sounds sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like
should play this at FNM.
He's gone off with it maybe 3 times in over the course of like 2 tournaments, but it sounds fun and silly. But yeah, the short answer is I don't really play decks like that. I like decks that are a lot more consistent. But you know, when you say wacky deck, like that kind of thing is all relative. Like there are decks that have won or top aided Pro Tours that may have seemed a little wacky to some. Like, I don't know, when I first saw Amulet Bloom for the first time, I thought that deck was something else. But it's actually more consistent than I thought it was, and it's pretty sweet. I also remember when I had been playing Magic for only about 6 months, and Gatecrash came out, I thought that Boros Reckoner plus Blasphemous Act was like the coolest two-card combo, and I wanted to do something with it. And I told a bunch of my more serious grinder friends, and they were all like, oh, that's not going to work. Oh, you'll never find the right shell for that. Oh, whatever. And then Pro Tour Gatecrash happened, and there were three different decks in the top eight that all used those two cards, including the deck that won. So
I remember Jerry Thompson was even using Harvest Pyre with
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah, that happened too.
I don't really brew too much. My ex likes to do that, but sometimes he'll kind of rope me into that with him. When I first started playing Magic again, I made a Omnidoor deck that had Maze's End also as a win condition. And it was kind of crazy to get Omniscience out and be like, now I'm going to door you. Oh, hey, I have Maze's End. What's up? How do you like losing to Maze's End? And it was just kind of crazy, and I liked that. I would maybe do something like that again if I could find maybe the right card to build something around or something like that. But for me, it all comes down to like what I like to play. And I like to play control, so I'll try it in many different ways. If someone's like, hey, this control deck just came out, you know, what do you think about it? I'll sleeve it up and play it. You know, why the hell not? I mean, the only reason I really went to blue-white during Return to Ravnica was because I bought 4 Sphinx's Revelations to play in that Omnidoor deck. And I was like, well, this isn't really working out anymore. What should I do? Max is like, why don't you just do blue-white? I was like, ooh, I don't really know how to play a control deck. And I just kind of taught myself how, and maybe it sort of goes back to, you know, having so many things in my life I didn't have control over, and maybe playing a deck like that is like, this is something I do. So, I don't know. But I like control, but I'll do other things. If anyone has any wacky deck suggestions, shoot them my way. I'll give them a try.
I've played a few wacky decks. I don't usually play them at, like, FNM or any kind of sanctioned tournaments. I like to take decks that are typically thought of as good and then put different cards in them that people don't typically think of going in decks like that. Like blue, white, red control when Sphinx's Rev and Supreme Verdict were a thing. I was like, why in the mirror are we not just playing Stormbreath Dragon in our board? Because that deck has no answer to it and they're boarding out all of their Supreme Verdicts. And then, Brooke and I went to a...
I totally did that too, by the way.
Yeah, Brooke and I went to a Star City in Seattle, and he missed top 8 on Breakers, just like storm breathing them all day. And so I like to try and use all parts of the buffalo. You know, getting... oh, Watson. getting use out of cards that people don't typically think of to use in certain decks is kind of where I like to try and be. I usually take shells and then modify them. But I'll sleeve up like wacky decks. Like I played Maze's End competitively for a while, and it was kind of unbeatable. Like a lot of people just don't see it coming or see it being good. But if you can pilot it, then you can win. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, Maze's End was pretty sweet.
I actually have the opposite. I tried Maze's End, and I didn't like it because I always felt like I was a turn behind, where everything I needed to do, because everything came into play tapped, you know, it was like, okay, I really, really need to get Kiora out, but having to spend one more turn to get her out just was too late, or they were filling up their board, and I really, really needed a board wipe, but I couldn't wait one more turn to get Supreme Verdict out. I just felt like I was always missing something.
Mm-hmm. Did you run Gatekeeper Vines in it?
I did, yeah.
I would just be like Gatekeeper Vine, fog, Supreme Verdict, da 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 da. Good times. Oh, now I'm sad.
I enjoy playing wacky decks. I think, I know game day, I typically look at game day as a wacky day. Like, I don't look at game day as anything competitive, where, you know, we do have the play mat, we do have a little bit of competition, but that's, you know, I like having events where I don't feel like I have to be on, where I do have those events where I can just sort of play something goofy, and whatever happens, happens, and game day is like that for me. So if I were going to game day this weekend, I would probably bring something a little silly and have a really good time. It also depends on how my week went. My primary LGS, their standard is very casual, they have a lot of kids and families that play. They don't have the best prize support, and I'm okay with that. So if I've had a really, really long week, I don't want to have to think about metagames and matchups and sideboarding. I do kind of want to play something goofy where I can go in with maybe a 13-card sideboard and just have a really good time and maybe, you know, just have a few laughs. And so it depends. It also depends on if I'm really inspired. I remember when I discovered the Villainous Wealth deck, I saw Frank Lepore piloting it on one of his videos, and Villainous Wealth for 22. Who doesn't want to do that? So if I see a really awesome deck like that, that I just can't get out of my head, I just want to experience it, I'll take it to something fun. It just depends if the deck speaks to me or not. And, you know, we've been talking about what we look for in a deck. I like mid-range decks because I like the safety net that comes with them. I like the fact that with mid-range decks, and specifically black-green decks in Modern, you're kind of 50-50 against everything. And I am kind of a person who likes to make safe choices in life. I'm not spontaneous. I'm not somebody who's jumping out of airplanes. I'm not somebody who's eating spicy foods at Thai restaurants. I'm just I order the same thing when I go to restaurants. I wear the same style of clothes. I cut my hair the same. And that's kind of how I look at my decks. You know, I like those decks that are just very safe. They have good, solid curves. Good against a little bit of everything, but nothing too extreme. So when I do get to play those wacky decks, it's me sort of not being myself for one day, where that's my version of being spontaneous, where, you know, I don't have an answer for everything. I'm not playing black-green, but when I do get that Villainous Wealth off, it feels fantastic.
So, Erin, you said you're not going to game day. Are you guys Chris and Hallie?
I'm not sure. We'll see. So the Modern PPTQ is on Saturday, and the same game store is going to be running game day on Sunday, so I'll see if I feel up to it, but I'm not sure yet.
I'm thinking possibly no, because this coming Saturday is Record Store Day, and I kind of have vinyl I want to buy.
Yeah, so. I'm gonna stop by the record store on my way to the PPTQ, or possibly like in between rounds, because there is a record store maybe like 5 blocks from the game store.
Ooh, hell yeah.
People still buy records?
Oh my God, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I worked in a record store for like 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, records are a thing. Except if you're super hipster, then you're all about cassettes apparently now.
Yes.
I was like, what is this? Cassettes? No. Vinyl I could understand to a degree, but I'm like, cassette? Really? Okay. I guess that makes sense. I think last record store day someone wanted a Madonna cassette tape, and I was like, okay, go for it. What are you hoping to get, Hallie?
What's that?
What are you hoping to get? I'm just curious.
I mean, I'm just sort of trying to acquire a lot of my favorite albums on vinyl, just because I have so many things just on MP3 and I want to own physical copies of them. Last record store day, I think I went with Robert and we bought like his favorite Jimi Hendrix album and like a Deltron 3030 album or something like that. Albums that he really liked that we just didn't own, like physical copies of. This time, I think I want to get a Kendrick Lamar album. Yes. I have the new one. I want to go back and get his older albums. And I'm thinking of, I don't know, maybe getting some more hip hop on vinyl. I don't know. I'll figure it out.
Ellie, you like hip hop? That's so awesome. I don't know why. I guess I would not have pegged you as a hip hop lover, but that's
yeah, it's the kind of thing where like it's one of those things that nobody really guesses about me. It's along the same lines as like when I tell people that I like hockey. No one really assumes that about me either. But yeah, I love hip hop. I love hockey. Go Islanders.
Do you pop lock and drop it?
I wish I knew how. I took a breakdance class when I was 9, and I can't remember any of it.
A breakdancing class?
Yeah.
Wow. I think the closest, I mean, I have a great appreciation for hip-hop, too, but wow. I mean, I would see you being more of like the flip it and reverse it.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, man. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, where can they find you all? How can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can email me at hcsmtg@gmail.com, and you can read my writing here on Gathering Magic.
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at KatieN_14 or by email katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is TEHKRIZ. That's to Chris. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. Yo to Chris. And my Tumblr is also to Chris.
And I am on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show's Twitter account is TheGFBracket. Send us your questions and your feedback at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave us a review and some stars. And with that said, we will see you all
also
next week.
Also, send us your bathrooms.
Bye. Yes, we haven't gotten any bathroom pictures yet, so please, we want to see the fine bathrooms that you are using at your local game store. So, bye.
Bye.